Support the Bartholomew Town Podcast by subscribing, rating, and reviewing on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, I sit down with two Rhode Island bands, the Z-Boys and Heather Rose in Clover. Rhode Island has a vast and storied history of producing original and long-lasting musical artists. From Providence's position in the international lineage of noise and hip-hop, to the post-punk and blues legacy bands out of Newport and South County, to Northwest Rhode Island's folk and country pool, and the East Bay's position as a mecca of interesting ideas, the Ocean State has served as both a practical and inspiring home base for many musical movements. At once an insular musical community, a la early 60s Jamaica or mid-century New Orleans, yet also interconnected within the Northeast megapolis with Boston and New York, Rhode Island's blend of native-born artists and transient student artists has produced a specific brand of musical conversation. Two bands that are making waves in the area right now are the Z-Boys and Heather Rose in Clover, who are each about to release new music and perform release shows in Providence. Like me, Heather Rose in Clover and the Z-Boys have been longtime regular customers in Rhode Island music and beyond. Between each of these conversations, we discuss the making of each band's latest recordings, making music in Rhode Island, the challenges of finding employment as a musician in Rhode Island, staying inspired and motivated, and staying ahead of the curve when it comes to major shifts in the music industry. Be sure to check out the dozens of conversations I've had with Rhode Island media personalities like Jim Terracani, Dan McGowan, Kim Kalunian, Matt Allen, and R.J. Heim, politicians like Senator Whitehouse, Congressman Cicilline and Congressman Langevin, Providence Mayor Alorza and Newport Mayor Bova, and artists like Nicola Mazzo and Roz Raskin. It's all right there for you at BartholomewTown.com, RIPodcast.com, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. All right, so we are here with the Z-Boys. Well, actually, two of the Z's. We don't have Greg Z. Burgess here with us. But tomorrow, big day. Single, the split 7-inch with Monty Ruckus. It comes out. It'll be available for streaming. And then Saturday night at the Columbus Theater, right there on Broadway in Providence, Rhode Island, the release show with... also got the Low Cards on there, Brian and company, so... What should we expect from the Mighty Z-Boys with this release, Amato?
I believe the Mighty Z-Boys plan to play a pretty vast set of original music that will include the song that is on the 7-inch, but also a bunch of songs that we've been working on and recording this winter that we're excited to present to people for their consideration for the present and future.
Nice. Ziggy, what was it like making this the 7-inch from a recording standpoint? Is it a live take or what was
we recorded live with Ray Gennari where we did our first EP, and it was cool because it was really just going in there to do. I think we did two songs that day.
It was two songs.
So it's like usually we're going in and like tracking like a bunch of tunes, but it was kind of more of a in and out kind of thing, but. That came out really good, and I love working with Ray, and he's working with us with our new record we're in the process of making right now as well.
Yeah, shout out to Rocktorium Records and Ray Gennari.
Yeah, South totally. County, look out right there in my homeland. You're such you're a band that is very electric live, and sometimes that can be extremely difficult to capture on record, you know. Sometimes it's because you're psyching yourself out, or sometimes it's just the mechanics of recording. But do you feel like you were able to capture what a listener, a fan from your Wednesday night standing gig at Perro Salado in Newport, that experience, you know, the Z-Boys, the height of it? Did you get that on the record?
I think we are getting it. It is a bit different. We've committed on a lot of these new recordings to working with a click, which is new for us, and like I think a lot of people might find it constricting, but for us, I think it's really helped us solidify a lot of grooves, and we've been able to capture the live like feeling, you know, through a lot of Ray's like recording techniques and things like that. But it's also really solidified a lot of things and made them sound even better, in my opinion, in a lot of ways. So
yeah, I definitely, the click track was huge, and I'm usually kind of against it, most recording, especially when we're doing live, but this time was the first time I really felt like free with still with the click track, and like even listening back, it really just, you know, made the groove settle in really nice. And like we did a pre-production day, which we haven't done before, like recording. We just spent a day just recording live scratch tracks and, you know, getting what the tempos are going to be before we go in the studio. And that cut a lot of time. And even just a little cut and paste of like, you know, maybe a guitar lick, like for one bar, you know, because it's all to a click, it's like way easier. So I'm definitely super into it.
Yeah. No question about it. Yeah, I feel like tempo, I also agree, working with a click, you know, on records, you know, it opens up the possibilities that you're probably looking for, like you say, a guitar lick or whatever it may be, or just giving the listener something that's, you know, easier to digest because it makes more sense to the body. But tempo mapping, that to me is the hardest part of the whole process, committing to the tempo and being like, all right, 76, it's not 74 or whatever it is. That I stress out over so much. How did you go about that? What was that like?
I think we only had like one moment in the studio where we were like, this is too slow.
Yeah.
You know, fortunately, there wasn't a lot of debate. And like the pre-production day was really great because we went in and this was all Ray's idea also. He was like, you got to come in for a day before. And then he just encouraged us after listening to what we had just played, because we played live for the pre-production and it was just very casual, very normal kind of performance. And he said, all right, I need you to solidify these. Like, so we actually got together and rehearsed.
Yeah, that was rare.
Yeah. And we really sat down and we thought about it. And I think there was really only one when we actually got to our studio time that we were kind of unsure about. But everything else, like, you know, we kind of did the homework that we were encouraged to do, and it really paid off.
Yeah.
And also my phone was broken the entire weekend, and I think that helped a lot. I bet a lot more focused. You know, I'm looking at my phone all the time, and like, you know, there wasn't anything else to look at.
He's looking at his phone right now.
Yeah, right.
He's lying.
We're inside the phone. He's watching this on Instagram live as it's happening on his phone.
Yeah. Yep. In the future.
In the future, yes. Is it frustrating to be a band that's as freaking undeniably awesome as you guys are, and have an original lineup, look awesome on stage, play great live, have great gear, and more than anything, just play with tons of soul? Is it frustrating that you're not like making money in like a huge international band?
Oh, stop it, Bill. You're too much.
Like, for real, though. I mean, like, you know, maybe not a huge international. You don't have to say, all right, you're you know, Korn.
Yeah. yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, you're not a local band, but. You know what I mean? Like, how do you get to that
local
next level? Right. But at the same time, you are right. How do you get to that next level? Cause it's not like, well, let's just practice and like get really good, you know?
Yeah. you know, I don't know if we're the right people to ask how you get to the next level, man, because I love what we do. And I think the most important thing is to just enjoy it. And I still struggle with this, so I'm not preaching, but try not to compare yourself to other people, because it's awful. And like, some perspective that I've kind of gained is that, you know, wherever you think that you're at and you're looking up to someone else that you idolize or that you respect or you admire their artistry, you know, like there's also someone that's looking up to you for what you do. And it's just important to keep that perspective that, like, as much as we want and we're like hungry for more, you know, in our careers and in the work that we make and to be recognized for it, you know, you've got to keep some perspective and just try to enjoy it sometimes. And I struggle with that more than anyone, I think, you know, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've always just wanted to make the best music I can, no matter what the situation, like. But, like, I'm fortunate now that I'm not making a ton of money, but between playing gigs and we both, you know, teach lessons at the same music store, like, I'm able to just focus on my music and I'm happy about that. You know, like, I've had every kind of random horrible job you can think of and been fired from almost all of them too, you know. So I mean,
I've heard Ziggy was the worst busboy in the history of the mooring in Newport.
Yeah, I was the worst a lot of things, but you know.
Well, how can you be really that good at it? You know, it's so difficult to go down another career path or even get into a job where you feel bad someone's like training you and all that, when you know in your head that the second the things are available, the opportunities are available with music, you're going to go for that. You'd never be like, well, you know what? Let me bust another table tonight.
Yeah, no, and those, I guess it's like a lot of like, you know, the bosses, it's their job to keep their everything on the rails for themselves and for the business. So you have to kind of understand where they're coming from. But, you know, it's okay to, you know, we all want something more from our lives and meaning, you know, and that's like, I think, a huge thing. So you know, we all have to do things to do the things that mean something to us.
Totally.
God, so that's like, yeah.
I had a great boss in New York at a law firm that I was a paralegal at, and they loved having musicians and actors as their administrative assistants. They're like, man, it's great. We got people who are in here. They're fired up about life. They're working hard. We'll let them off early if they've got a gig or whatever. And we know they're not going to be here in a year, but whatever. You're doing administrative assistant work. You shouldn't want to be here in a year. So they love that approach. I don't see that in Rhode Island so much. I feel like you tell them, oh, I'm a musician. They go,
What's their phone number? Right?
There were others, too, that I encountered, other people that had this experience. Oh, yeah, I work for whatever company, and yeah, they love that I'm happy and have goals in my life besides pleasing them and making sure their Uber's here on time, you know? So it's a balance, but I agree, it's not here in Rhode Island, that's for sure.
No.
I mean, every boss I've like had has been like, what do you mean you can't work weekends? Or like, you know, and it's like the prime time, like, and or just like, you know, they didn't really, I mean, some people got it, but like, you know, it's just at the end of the day, you like really have, how much time can you take off if that's like, especially being like a seasonal, like growing up in Newport, but like even, you know, all over Rhode Island, it's like winter time. It's like not as much stuff going on. The hours get cut and, you know.
But you got to be there when they want you to be there, you know. That kind of thing is tough.
It's tough, yeah.
I do think like one thing, like I worked at a great restaurant that I still love and actually went to yesterday called Nick's on Broadway.
Oh yeah.
And I really admire Derek. I think sometimes when I worked there and I needed time for gigs, we would butt heads, but it was because he's so passionate about his art and his craft and cooking and like the things that he does for a living. And he really expected and still does, I believe, that everyone and that worked for him cared as much as he did. And so that was, you know, like to hear that you cared about something else, like, and that's like how single-minded he is that like, right. He would, you know, like he was like, what do you mean you can't work? You know, it's like, and I would get where he was coming from. It still was frustrating for both of us, I think.
Right.
And we have a better relationship now that we don't work together. And shout out to Derek. I love you. Congratulations on your new restaurant.
Nick's on Westminster.
Jeez, man. You're something else.
Joe Paolino. He's on Paolino's show this weekend, I think. You know, look out.
Wait, you got Paolino too?
Well, he was on here, but he's actually on Joe Paolino's show.
Oh, really?
But Joe Paolino was on this show. That was an interesting one. We talked about the smoking ban as well. You know, it was interesting.
The smoking ban killed culture everywhere, I believe.
That's it. That's why no one goes to shows anymore. Paolino. We got it.
It was Paolino. Dang and blast you, man. Anyways, but yeah, like, so people, you know, I think that's a thing in Rhode Island is like a lot of people are really passionate about their thing. And if you're involved in it, then that's, you know, and then you can't do something, then it's like, rah, you know,
right.
But I mean, I wish people were more understanding like that. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, you should have a life. Everyone should have a life that they enjoy. Right. Like,
well, yeah, and also you just, I think the analysis could be done that you'd say, well, all right, for me, like if I was there at that office, I knew I was like fundraising for my career and I needed to be there however many hours to do that. But I was happy to do a good job at that. But if you said, all right, here's a BlackBerry. When you get home, I might email you some documents to edit. I wouldn't do that because I'm too busy working on my career. You know, so if you have people to understand that, it can work.
I think if people get where you're coming from, they're willing to give you a little bit, then you're willing to give them more too when it comes down to it. Like if they need something from you and they're going to, you know, give you something that you need later and there's actually an understanding, then that's great. You know, that's really ideal. And like for working, you know, and like balancing your work and your life. And that's something that I think is getting lost, I think, in the culture as a whole. But
yeah, let's talk about Providence Newport. You're a band that has sort of like Silverteeth, you know, where it's like connected to both communities in an authentic way. It's not totally. It's not just, oh yeah, we play here like once in a while. We're now we're part of this, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, you could make an argument that you're a Newport band or a Providence band, kind of depending, I guess, on convenience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we do debate this. Actually.
Yeah. And it's interesting too. Looking at it from the outside, I wonder which one is more intriguing. You know, as well, Newport's so intriguing to see that. You know, you look at Dave Passifume's like MySpace profile
his,
or whatever.
His empire.
Yeah. Like Newport, Rhode Island. Why? But it's amazing.
The Browns are going to be great this year. That's all I'm saying.
Congratulations, Dave. Yep. But what do you think is kind of the epicenter of music in Rhode Island? Is it Newport? Is it Providence? Is it neither? What do you feel about that?
I think Providence has to be the cultural epicenter right now.
Yeah.
Newport is I think a pretty close second. But
yeah,
at this point, it's great
to have both. And like having grown up in Newport, and I just recently moved up to Providence a couple months ago, and like, I'm stoked on it. It's bigger. I mean, it's not as beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful in different ways, but I love like the ocean, like being by the water, that kind of scenic. It's very relaxing. Like you can really like live a nice, relaxing life, and like there's cool, creative people, and you can walk everywhere, like, and it's like safe. And, you know, Providence, it's like, it's just bigger, but there's more things happening, but it's not like so big. You still see everyone, you know, like in the few bars that are here too, but it's cool. I like that we do both.
Yeah, and we've been really lucky to have a lot of support from Newport, and I think that's something that a lot of bands in Providence, you know, would like, and a lot of bands from a lot of places, you know, like you need, and like I would say that is our home. You know what I mean? Like I think as a band, it's our home. Yeah, that it's so important to us, and like everything that we have been able to do has stemmed from the support and like the good fortune that we've had like playing in Newport. But I've lived in Providence for like 7 years, or you know, a long time, and I just love this city. I love living here. It's I think, you know, it's really diverse. There's a great number of people, like so many people just playing music, and there's so many styles of music represented. And one thing I would love to see more is more crossover. And you do get those kind of things sometimes, like with PVD Fest or Foo Fest or things like that. You can see that. But in the regular day-to-day and, like, you know, shows happening this weekend, I would love to see more. And I know I need to do more personally to, like, put us in those situations where more crossover happens. But, you know, that's something that I think – you know, like Providence has a lot of diversity, but like, how do we bring it all together
as
a real city? You know,
just moments ago before you walked in here and airing for the listeners, just, you know, moments before this interview, we were talking about the same thing with Heather Rose and Clover.
Okay.
Yeah. Why isn't there? I remember in Brooklyn, open mics or shows we would do, there'd always be an integration of hip hop and folk and, you know, somebody with like a chaos pad yelling into it or in poetry. That wasn't an uncommon, that was kind of how it was. It was really when I got to Rhode Island that it started to be like, oh, here's the folk people and they played the Columbus Theater, and then here's whatever, you know, the noise peer group and the hip hop peer group, or the two, there's kind of two hip hop peer groups in Providence. But
yeah,
I totally agree. Ziggy, I feel like you're like an artist that any artist would love to have as their, well, you're, both of you would be so solidly positioned to collaborate with anyone. Do you feel like that itch at all, or is that...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I play with like whoever I can. Like, I mean, I'm always playing music, and like, you know, we play together a lot, but like we both, you know, play in other projects and do other things, and like especially like moving up to Providence and playing in a space where I can play my drums like at 4 a.m. if I, you know, in the right time, like right day of a week, but like, you know, really no limit on how I can practice and be creative. And I live with a bunch of creative people in a big space, and like, you know, people come through all the time, and I play with them and just have the opportunity. Like Newport, like I was lucky to rent a whole house with like 3 roommates and play in the basement till like 8, but not even like full tilt. But it's like, if I have like a moment of inspiration at like 11 a.m, like, you know, at 11 at night, I can, you know, lay it down, or, you know, that's really what brought me here, is like to find a spot with that kind of opportunity to just, you know, especially being a drummer, like who really wants to put up with that much noise and
accept
a bunch of
like
maniacs like myself, you know? So
yeah,
I feel pretty at home already, even though I'm pretty new to here. So yeah.
What's your favorite Providence restaurant?
Oh, jeez. Nick's is up there. I can't pick just one, man. You got to get...
I really got to explore. I've been going a lot, Taco Bell a lot, but...
Yeah, Zig's new. Zig's new. He's stuck on Taco Bell.
It's like you and Randy Robbins.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, you know, I like just, like, eating in my car. Like, I usually wait too late till it's, like, you know, nothing's open. But, yeah, I mean...
I got to have an Upsara chicken wing. And like,
oh yeah, I went to Upsara.
Yeah, that's right. That
you know, if we're talking
good.
Like your populist food, man, I got to get my Upsara, my La Lupita.
Yeah, La Lupita.
My,
it's
you know,
dope.
Some Rancho Grande, maybe Chilangos. I'm hitting all the taco Faux spots
horns.
Right now. Faux horns.
I like that spot
man.
A lot.
I guess that's technically Pawtucket, but
oh, really?
Oh, it
that's
counts, man. So
yep.
good. Mm. Troop is amazing.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, totally.
La Arepa in Pawtucket, if you like some Venezuelan.
Yeah, right on the Smithfield line or whatever.
Yeah, man.
Saying.
Yep. Yeah. There's I do love, you know, like there is a lot of diversity in Providence, and it's something that, you know, you can always explore, and it is a beautiful city for that. You just kind of got to know where to look. So
no question. All right. We got about 2 minutes left. Let's wrap up one more time. The release show is Saturday night. It's at the Columbus Theater. It's going to be with Muddy Ruckus, who is the other artist that you did the split with. Also the Low Cards.
Yes.
Some friends of all of ours. Why
yes.
not? You know,
totally.
Friends of Providence and beyond. And then, of course, the record itself drops tomorrow. You can hear it online, Spotify or whatever. And then you're off Portsmouth, New Hampshire?
So Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So we're doing a series of shows with Muddy Ruckus. And we were brought together with Muddy Ruckus by Ray Gennari also and Rocktorium Records to do this split. And we're playing with Muddy Ruckus March 30th in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Friday, April 5th at Atwood's Tavern in Cambridge, and then Saturday, April 6th at One Longfellow Square in Portland, Maine.
Wow, a lot of good veggie burgers. A lot of good veggie burger locations named right there by my vote.
Yeah, man.
That's awesome. That's a nice tour. New England's so fun to tour around in.
It's
you know?
Beautiful and it's close, you know.
Yeah, it's totally.
Like,
bed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm driving 2 hours two states away. That's brilliant, you know. Like.
Yeah. And if you count Newport and Providence as separate markets, which, you know, it depending on the scenario, in the summertime, I think it's definitely two separate markets. Because there's just different things happening. But even if you don't, there's just so many places to play within 2 to 3 hours of Providence that it's a great location
true.
To be in.
It is, yeah. You can cover a lot of ground pretty quickly.
The Z-Boys, sure. We're going to have we'll have that music for you right here on this program probably next week because it'll be out tomorrow. But we've been playing Boogaloo each week, so.
I'll send you some more, man.
Nice.
It's all coming.
And shout out to Greg.
Bill Bartholomew.
Race in the clock to get myself home before dark. The highway's like a park.
All right, so we are here with Heather Rose and Clover. I've got Canyons in my hand. Hands, actually, plural, because it is on compact disc. And it's really exciting. I don't have a CD player in my computer, but I do in my van. But it's like an awesome display. You said, Heather, that there was sort of a 90s overtone, or you've heard that before, so you wanted to make sure you had the physical Newbery's Comic adventure style product in your hand.
Yeah, and it felt like it was a nice like period at the end of the sentence. Like to have it's awesome to have the album up digitally, and you know the pre-sale is going on now. You can get it at Amazon, you can get it on iTunes, but to physically have it in your hand and be able to look back at it, like that's how I spent most of my. I don't know, my teens, like opening up an album and seeing if I could read the tiny little print and to see who was on it. And, oh, they were on somebody else's album. And, oh, that's so cool. And it's also a way to, like, thank everybody that's helped us out along the way. And so, yeah, I'm happy that we made them.
And those will be available at your release show. What are all the details for that? We'll go over that a couple of times just to reiterate.
Sure.
I can't even speak. Hold it. I'm so excited about this record. Look out.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, man.
We know that feeling.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
For sure. Yeah, it's PVD Live is actually on board. They're presenting the night.
Our good friend Chrissy Stewart.
Yeah, yeah. She's the real deal. So we're working with her, and it's going to be out of Skew. And we spoke with John at Askew and said, you know, we want to try to have a night where it doesn't matter how old you are or what you make, you know, what you do for a living. Like, we want people to be able to come and hear the music. So it's a free show. It's all ages. And we were lucky enough to get some amazing bands. You sort of like set, you know, your sights on your wish list. And there was one band that couldn't play, but I don't know, Silverteeth, they were.
Yeah, they're brutal.
They are.
No, but we love you, and we are very excited about your album release coming up. So,
I appreciate
that is
it.
Totally, totally understandable. It's tough, man. You're playing a city, and like, you don't want to oversaturate. You got to pay attention to all of these moving parts and focus on your own art and support other artists. So, we are playing with Breachway, which is Noah Barreto. He was in Public Alley. They were the cute high school band that somehow demolished all the other bands in the BRU Rock Hunt.
Oh, yes.
And so he's from that fame, and he's going to be doing a solo set to open up the night, followed by a Dream Job with Ian Savino. And that band, actually, it's going to be their first show under that name. They were Half Hearted Hero. They're out of New Bedford, Mass. And then Weekend Friends is this amazing band that we've become friends with over time, from being fans of their music to being good friends with them. And they are busy at South by Southwest this week, kicking some... Oh, did you say you heard the F word on this station the other day?
I may have, but not on Bill's show necessarily.
Okay. I will say butt then. They are kicking butt down in Austin right now.
I feel like my MIDI controller.
Oh, yeah, that's
exciting.
Right.
You know, look out.
It was just going to be a double... S. So, you know,
yeah,
we'll
let that one slide. I think Terracani said that, and I let it slide. So,
all right, FCC out there. There's different rules, I would think.
Right? Yeah. They're kicking ass and taking names, and they're from Portland, Maine. Yep. And they just came back from Europe. So I love them. I'm psyched that they're playing, but I'm still sort of like pinching myself that it worked out with their agent. They're on Don Giovanni Records, and so they're going to really just meld the night together with some good energy.
Yeah, that's a terrific bill. And it must be exciting to do it at Askew. I mean, we're all sort of the same generation. I don't know about you. I spent a lot of time at the Century Lounge at 3 o'clock in the morning. A lot of that was sort of blues bands and things like that. It didn't always have the programming that you were after, but the space itself was wonderful. So let's hear about that. Why did you choose it as a band?
There's something about Askew, and you know, Providence, there's a lot to be said about Providence with our art scene, our cultural scene. There's so many talented people, not just in the music scene, but if we're talking just music, it's a rich environment for venues. But there's something magical about Askew. You walk in there and it feels like home. It feels comfortable. Folks are friendly. Staff are friendly. And they have a cultural consciousness, I think, there that really drew us to them. They worked with us on making sure it was all ages. They worked with us on making sure that there was no cover. So it really gave us the opportunity to be flexible, to, you know, invite people there that we want to make sure are there to hear this sort of a show. So there's just something about Askew.
Yeah.
We really love it.
And they still have the sound booth of the Century Lounge, and they still have the stage. And my old band, the Stereo Birds, we were the Mockingbirds, and we changed our name to the Stereo Birds. We played the last show at the Century Lounge. Like, we were like the house rock band, basically. And so it felt like a very good, you know, 360, come back around and release this music.
That's really interesting. I'm very familiar with
the Mockingbirds, Stereo Birds, and I've seen you play back there at the Lounge.
Johnny Rockstar on the bass.
Yeah.
And a great band that I remember seeing you forge a relationship with Antigone Rising at one point.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, they played the show. Oh, gosh, I still don't know if this was clever or terrible, but we made stickers at my pushing called No Longer Mocking, But Even More Rocking, the Stereo Birds.
You probably do.
Definitely,
and Antigone Rising played that show, and we were together for like, I want to say 8 years. I still talk to Cowboy Kenny. We call on the holidays and see how each other's doing. Still talk to Johnny, and... I think that I was blessed and cursed of having my first band be like a little family and do so well and push through. And I was super young. I started, I think I was 15 when I joined them. So I'd been searching for that again. And it's like having an awesome first relationship and then everybody's crap after that. So it took a long time, but I'm super happy with what we got here with Chris and Lisa. And yeah, I like Lisa so much. I married her. Chris was married already. And it's not Utah, guys, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah, you might have trouble.
Yeah. I hope you're saying that about your soulmate over here on the
case. Let's talk about the record. I listened to it in its entirety. I've heard bits and pieces of it. You put out a very very intriguing, I should say, Instagram teaser or something like that that kind of got me, oh, wow, here we go. But I listened to the record in its entirety today. It starts off really hard-hitting, and then you get into some acoustic stuff. The fourth track, really interesting the way it starts. It just keeps moving the entire time. So let's go to the foundation, the drums, very active drums, very orchestrated drums. And in terms of mixing, not mixed at all like a 90s record, something specific. And I think it sets a tone for the overall record. So what was that all about, Chris?
Yeah, so, I mean, with the drums and... I'll go back to when I first met Heather and Lisa. Like my style was very like hard rock driven. Like big influences like Will Calhoun from Living Color. Grohl. Nirvana and Foo Fighters. So like Taylor Hawkins, you link them in. Like so very hard rock all over the place. And then I meet Heather and Lisa, and it's like, you know, songs are more catchy, like, but so it's a dynamic duo there where, you know, Heather was really like, listen, on the album, like Half Full Rain, like I want you to do your thing, but fit it within, you know, this pop kind of tune with it. So the end result ended up being like a really nice balance of songs that you listen to and you're like, wow, this is a really catchy song. And then you drill down a little bit deeper, like Satellites, and there's a lot of fills that you're, you know, if you drill down deeper and listen to the drums, you're, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, it's really well orchestrated. I wonder how you recorded it. I'd be interested in the process. Like, was that, were you in there with a click track and nothing else, or were you playing along to some kind of guide track?
So we started, so most of the songs were a click track, and then there were actually certain cuts where Craig was just like, you just trust your gut, and like the click track wasn't working. We had to go through it a few times. He's like, just trust your gut and go with it, and we ended up nailing it in a few takes.
Yeah, you've got an internal click track, so yeah. It's like you've got to use one or the other. It's like the science or the art or wherever they mesh. It's such a challenge. We've been through that. You know, our drummer Tom is an awesome drummer, whether we play to the click or not. But sometimes it's like neither one, or like we're like, man, we should try the. You can go back and forth forever. How did you narrow down as far as like getting in the studio and really figuring out, all right, we've got a sound, we've got a goal, let's make it happen? What was that
like? So I spent a lot of time trying to get out of my head with that. This is my first real serious band. I've played probably since I was 3 years old, playing guitar and playing music, and I really never left my basement doing that. So going in the studio is a little intimidating, to say the least. But I think being as comfortable as I am with this crew, with Chris and with Heather, and really just trying to feel through it and not focus too much on the science and on the timing and on that click track, and more of just feel it and play it and pretend like you're on stage, you know? So yeah. I think that's how I felt my way through the process.
Totally. Well, it's a very consistent rhythm section throughout the record. So the songwriting. So you're obviously you're a songwriter, you know, you kind of are, you're not. So whether you're in sort of the soul asylum zone that I, you know, that broad kind of mesh of songwriter and alternative rock, or just in more of an alt country zone or something more spacey, it's very consistent. You have a style. So you've been at it for a long time, obviously, but how did you find yourself for this record?
So this record, Canyons, it's been written over a long period of time. Usually I would write the songs and have them all in a group and play the crap out of them. And then you go when that's like at its, you know, total, like the best that you can get it live, then you go into the studio. And this was different. It was sort of like piecemeal. I had started recording it years ago, and the lineup kept like changing out, and it got really discouraging. And so I joke and say that I quit music once a week at least.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Right, we all do.
That is true. And on a day when I hadn't quit music, I was like, maybe I'm just going to finish this damn thing. And we had found, or Chris found us, and I remember one day we were having a band meeting, and we were sitting at my kitchen table, and Chris said, you know, it's maybe a good idea just to get these songs like out there. And I know it's such a simple concept, but I had been so precious about them, like, oh, what if they're not perfect, and oh, what if it doesn't sound cohesive, that I think I was holding myself back. I do a really great job of getting in my own way and getting in my head. And yeah, these two help to be like, that's nonsense. And, you know, you just got to go this way or go that way. So we have a nice balance with each other. And songwriting wise, it was funny because with all the promotion of the album, one of the new things about releasing an album that I hadn't experienced before is all these places want you to write like elevator pitches of each song. And I'm like, oh, that's easy. And some of them are really hard because like, I know what they're about, but you don't want to be long winded about it. And so that almost doing that and going through that process helped me to, remember like why I wrote the song and what the songs were about. I'm really songwriting wise, I'm very, focused on lyrics. Lyrics are so very important to me, and it works out because when we're writing together, I know I don't have to, you know, go to fisticuffs to keep, you know, it was always challenging, you know, sometimes in bands where you're like, oh my God, I got this great line. And then there's another songwriter who's really into lyrics too. And they're like, oh, I don't like that line for the chorus. Use my line. And it's hard to focus as a songwriter when, for me, when there's not like a carved out job for me. And I trust that when I finish a thought or finish a song, I can hand it to Lisa and Chris and they'll start. Yeah, I was talking about it today with Lisa that my sparkly poppy, like pop sensitivity won't ever be able to be super loud and turned up to 11 because Chris will stop it with the way he plays. And his, you know, the heavy kind of place that he comes from, where he draws on, will never be as sparkly because, I mean, will never be as heavy because of how I'm sort of, don't mean to, but I'm super poppy. Don't mean right to all the time. Sometimes I super mean to. And Lisa's like the musical middle of the Oreo cookie who keeps us from, you know, going too far one way or the other.
Like to play both sides of the fence. Yeah. And it seems to work out well. But yeah, and I think that's a great way of describing the influences. And I think, you know, we all listen to such different stuff that we try to draw from that sort of stuff. Like, I mean, Braylon Lacy as a bass player who plays with Erykah Badu is one of my favorites. Michelle Ndeghio Cello is one of my favorite bass players. And I love neo-soul style music, but I also love Riot Girl music, you know? So I can play all kind of over the field with these guys. And I think the benefit of this band sometimes is we're open-minded to do that, where I may not be comfortable, Chris will pull me in a direction. And then we're like, oh yeah, okay, maybe we should go with this. So we have a lot of fun when we're trying to come up with ideas and write songs.
Yeah, and I think that's the like the nice thing about the influences is like, and how it all melds together is it, at the end of the day, it still sounds like us, still sounds like Heather Rose and Clover, where if you're pulling from so many different influences, bands tend to spread themselves out so far where you're like, all right, this they wrote this song, but that's not who they are. Mm-hmm. So that's the beauty of it is like at the end of the day, you can listen, you know, from beginning to end on this album, there's songs that vary in influences, but at the end of the day, it's Heather Rose and Clover.
authenticity.
Yeah.
It's what we seek. It's like the hardest thing to find the truth, as they say. And that's one of the roles of a songwriter, for sure, is in a band, in crafting and presenting music. In my opinion, it's a responsibility, is to present, you know, material for other people to pursue what they might find as the truth, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're throwing garbage out there to, you know, get on Urban Outfitters playlist or whatever, hold with those as this exclusive goals,
sure.
You know, the short term, you might get a payout or something, maybe some kind of attention to get the band out to the next sphere or something, but then 3 years later, what?
Well, you're stuck playing that music that didn't mean anything to you, and those are the people who end up going down really scary drug-induced roads, I imagine. I've always tried. I used to play conferences, like music conferences all over the place. And I remember one really, like, one of the big panel people had said to me, we were talking about my old band, and that was my existing band at the time. And he said, you know, you have to keep playing what's true to you, because eventually it's going to curve around and public opinion and the general like sense of what's good music will come back around to what you're playing, as long as what you're playing is good. So I have always kept my, like, the little orchestra in my head, like, sounds similar. Like, all the little songs that go on during the day can sound like, I think, Heather Rose and Clover music. But I don't think that, I think we came about, and Canyons is coming out at a time where it seems like the 90s, people are coming back around to it. And all these amazing bands are, you know, that we were like lamenting to come back, are back. Belly's back. Veruca Salt is back. And they're back with really good albums. Tool, isn't Tool back? I'm like,
Faith No More.
That's a mystery.
Yeah.
Faith No More.
Faith No More, yeah.
So I think that it worked. It took a long time, but it worked, that eventually what gets down on the paper and got recorded on this album sounds relevant now. Yeah. And that was really important to us.
Yeah. Well, to me, and I think we all share this, did you all grow up in Rhode Island, essentially, or?
I did not.
You did not?
Okay. We did.
Where did you grow up?
New Jersey.
Okay, interesting. So northern or southern?
Central. There's actually a central Jersey.
Sure. So more Philadelphia market or New York market?
More like Sandy Hook, like Red Bank. So like Jersey Shore.
Interesting. So which TV would you get, like, which NBC affiliate would you get? The New York one or the
Philly New York
one? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's similar, like Northeast. Like, I just feel like here in the Northeast, alternative rock in the 90s was king. You know, it was a moneymaker for radio stations. It was nationally, but here it got another level where parents really knew songs and, you know, the whole thing. That machine was very impressive, and it's not, you know, even song like the like that Primitive Radio God song. You remember that song?
Mm-hmm.
That was like a top 40, like 92 Pro FM song, and that's like a guy like messing around with the drum machine, like a piano riff. It's actually a beautiful song, especially when you think of it, the fact that it was delivered to millions of people through corporate music channels. But now, you know, even though there's certainly an appetite for the music that you make, how do you deliver it to all the people who want it, because you don't have the benefit of the Primitive Radio Gods that they had?
Really good question.
Navigating the choppy waters of what is music today. I think that's what, you know, when we come up with something and an idea works on social media, then I feel victorious. And when it doesn't, that's usually when you find me like weepy and glum, because it's hard. I was used to get in a van, go out and play, really charm the pants off of this one important, usually white male, who is going to help to put you on the map because they have all the power. And that's the game that I knew how to play, and I didn't know how to do this. And it seems like, you know, I've been talking about it a lot with friends, and they're like, well, it must be awesome, because now you can just sit at your laptop and just get all the music out there. And in like a dream world, it's as easy as that. But it's really challenging because everybody, you know, we were talking about it the other day, Lisa's like in charge of all our social media. And even just putting a picture up on social media, as I'm sure you know, like there's specs for Facebook, there's specs for Instagram, and you can't just put up a picture and it doesn't fit correctly or look good on across the board on everything. So it's just a lot of upkeep and constant moving that you have to find a balance to do that while you're staying true to your art, still finding time to write and perform. So I actually, as hard as it was to like lug equipment everywhere and go from freezing cold New England down south where then you're sweating and you forgot you should probably bring like lighter clothes, like, and the van stinks and all of this stuff, like that seemed easier to me. But I mean, sometimes things are easy because they're what you know. But you know, we're learning, we tried to do it right, and I think that's why, like, you know, you can't see, but I have like really dark like circles under my eyes because we're trying to do it right.
Yeah, going all in and any sort of media today, it's like the attention spans are very short and you've got to capture people. I think you are doing it right though. I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, we have no idea as far as I mean, I think we have sort of an idea, but not really. I don't know what to do. Well, you know what I mean? Like you just can't bank on the same machine that we grew up thinking, you know, under, and even the fact that at our age and our experience, you know, being able to taste that a little bit and see it grow, like, oh wow, here we are back in Burlington for the third time. And what do you know? There's 15 people here to see us that love us instead of being there in a snowstorm with no one coming out.
Yeah.
Wow. The progress, you know, but at the same time, yeah, you can grow so much more, you know, in a more powerful way through the internet.
I don't know if it's true, but I'm starting to think that maybe no one is actually doing well and nobody knows what they're doing, because we really respect your band and you as an artist, and you were the third friend of mine who's a successful musician who's like, I really don't know what I'm doing. I had somebody ask me this week who I like look up to as a musician and be like, how are you doing all this release stuff? Do you think like you could give me some point? Like me give you some point? What the heck?
Yeah. So
nobody knows what they're doing. I think it's just trying to not stop and grab the opportunities that feel right. And
there are so many different avenues you can take. And what we kind of talk about lately is, okay, we have this album coming out. How do we get it out there? And there are, you know, I think about bands and how they can market themselves. And there are, you know, pay me X amount of dollars, I'll put you on this playlist.
Oh my
and
God,
pay
so
me
confusing.
X amount of dollars and I'll put you on my Instagram, on this blog over here. And it's all these micro mini transactions that, you know, is it worth it? Or is this a pyramid scheme? What are we doing here? Right. So there's stuff that I didn't even realize existed that you have to then kind of sort through. So we're trying to do it in the quote unquote right way. I don't know that there is a right way or that anybody has this figured out.
Yeah. It's way too early.
Things
are gonna change. We're at the point where, you know, Cherry and Webb was owning television stations just so they could sell TVs. So, you know, for people that no one knew what the hell they were doing back then as far as TV experts, we're there at best. Yeah. But it's interesting. You know, you look at an old record, we've got a pile of old records over here, and sometimes I'll see like the old jobs. Like when you go through, it's like, oh wow, Jack Schmidt was the tape operator, which meant that he would take the actual tape and put it into an oven to warm it up so that it could be recorded on. That job's gone, but now there's someone whose job is posting on Instagram. So it's like there's this ever shifting dynamic to being in a band, and it's like good that you actually have people doing things. Like you're not just saying, oh, forget it, you know, you actually care about it, and I think that's why you have,
what is it, Thursday? I'm not quitting music on Thursday. I think I quit on Monday and now I'm back at it.
Nice.
So it's
I'm glad to hear that.
It's just, it takes a lot, and I think it's tough to have to, you know, the not to get all political, but you need to make money to be able to have not even nice things, just things to be able to, you know, you want a house, you want a studio in your house. Well, you've got to get up and go to your 9-to-5 job. And I call them our big girl and big boy jobs. And yep. We're good at them, luckily, but God, it's tiring to like get home and be like, and switch it on to the music hat, you know?
Yes.
But we do it and we find a way. And I'm pretty certain that even the bands that don't have day jobs, they have different struggles. Like, oh man, we don't have money to make this album.
Yeah, we don't have food.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. Right.
We're on the street again.
Oh mm-hmm. man.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah,
I've seen bands recently that have had, you know, everything go right for them as far as the industry signings and money being fronted and, you know, come out in what I would say, you know, behind where like Silver Teeth is or where Heather Rose and Clover is as far as being able to actually put music out and also not being in debt. One time I read, or too far in debt, Jeff Tweedy, some anecdote, and someone asked, like, what's your recommendation to any young band out there? And it actually impacted me a lot. Don't live outside of your means. And that's so true. You see so many bands. Here's our national tour to South by Southwest and back, and here we go. And
with no tour support.
With a thousand vinyl that we just printed. And boy, where is that going to take you? I mean, yeah, you can get into each alternative weekly and chip away. But and we've done that. And when you're 23, it's all right. But at some point, is that how you lay the ground? I don't know. I think you're on the right track. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
There's no question.
It's kind of good that we can't afford vinyl. I don't know how you take it into hot climates.
Brutal.
Wouldn't it melt?
I got a vinyl from John Ferrone the other night, and the man's walking around with like one of those, you know, like messenger bags filled with vinyl.
Oh, I mean, God bless
him. Shoulder.
That's true. That's true.
I'll take one of those off right now.
Look how heavy it is.
Record. The Ferrone record
is awesome. Is
incredible. It's everyone should have that physical vinyl on there, just like this CD. We've got like a couple of minutes left because I'm going to play a few songs off of Canyons as well. Just Providence. I'm starting to warm up to Providence in a new way. I've been hanging out here since whenever. But now I'm finding little pockets that I didn't know were here before, including the space that y'all occupy, you know, and which is, it's a really cool thing. There's a lot of energy here. At the same time, there's no question there's, you know, cool kids tables and gatekeepers and it's,
yeah.
For being such a small city, there's not a lot of cross pollination between not so much genres, but peer groups. Do you feel that?
I feel that. Do you guys feel that?
Yeah. I mean, the outsider talking, but, I mean, I feel that, now, Grant, I've been in Rhode Island for 10 years now, and I've been very fortunate. Met my wife out here, met these two lovely ladies, and we're in a band now. I've made great friends. So, like, life is good, but I feel like that's everywhere you go, though. Like, I've been a transplant, and, like, you know, I lived out in Minneapolis. Minneapolis is a really cool city, but you got that vibe also, and I think it's just, like, people are comfortable living within their own skin. It's like, you know, they got their niches, they got their crews, and it's like they meet somebody from the outside and they're nice to you up front, and then they're like, well, like, nice meeting you, like, have a nice life. And I feel like, to your point, like, same thing with the music. It's like, you know, everybody's gonna have their cliques, everybody's gonna have their taste, and there's few people that, you know, really mend the two together. And it's like, listen, like, you know, like a transplant. Like, I've been a transplant. Like, I know exactly how you feel. Like, let's be friends. Or, like, music. Like, yeah, I may like Lana Del Rey.
And, I love Lana Del Rey. Thank you for saying
that. And yet, I like this really cool band, Dillinger Escape Plan. But, like,
now we're talking.
Yeah, but let's actually have a fun conversation together and, like, listen to both genres of music. Like, that's few and far between.
Yeah, that sounds like something Mike Patton would be involved in right
there. I know. Like, no more. Yeah.
One more time for those keen listeners out there. What is the details of the release show at Askew? What are the details?
Yes, it is March 30th. And I think I forgot to say the date. Holy smokes. Okay. It's March 30th. Starts at 8:30. It's free. All ages. And Breachway, Dream Job, and Weekend Friends are playing. And then we're going to close out the show.
Down at Askew.
Down at Askew.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Awesome. All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
That's all the time we have for today, but I'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new episode. Until then, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.